We are holding on Beis Amud Aleph, the last line of the narrowest line, the line against Main Street. We discussed yesterday, the Mishnah had talked about if you rent out a house to somebody, then the dung that's in the chatzar, which can be used for fertilizer, belongs to the Baal HaBayis, and we discussed the ins and outs of that, who was the chatzar rented out to this guy as well, who the oxen belong to, and we brought in that connection, we brought Rav Yosef of Chanina's din, that a person's chatzar can be kind of something for him, even shalom yidaita, even if he doesn't know that the object is in the chatzar yet, which is how, therefore, the Baal HaBayis is able, the owner of the chatzar is able to be koneh the dung, even though he doesn't know specifically when the animals are in there dropping it.
Right.
So, maybe we have another contradiction against Rav Yosef of Chanina. We know there's a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan. When we learn Cholin in a couple of years from now, Baruch Hashem, we will go in detail. The last parak of Cholin deals in detail with the din of that. One particular din that applies to Shiloh HaKan, which is what we're going to be dealing with over here, is the Torah introduces the mitzvah by saying, "Ki yikore kan tzipor lefanecha," if a nest of a bird happens to be in front of you, which implies, ki yimotze, the Gemara says, they would hold in prat lemezuman, as opposed to something which is already known to you. For example, you see people take eggs all the time, you know, people keep chickens for their eggs. You don't have to send away the mother chicken before you take the eggs. Why not? Because that's mezuman. That's already, it's there already. It's set up in your house or in your chicken coop or whatever that it is that way. It would have to be something that you randomly come across. It happened upon. A braisa says over there, yone shovach v'yone aliyah, doves, pigeons, that nest in a shovach, which is a birdhouse, kind of, the yone aliyah, or doves that nest in the attic, which neither of those, the birds themselves don't belong to you. They're on your property, but they themselves don't belong to you. They come. You have a shovach, you have a birdhouse put up over there, and they come in and out of it, and the same thing with the attic. Chayavus b'shiluach, you are chayav to do shiluach akan if you find eggs or bait or chicks in the nest from those birds. But you're not allowed to take them from the point of view of gezel, not because it's actual gezel, because they're not really yours, they don't really belong to the owner of the property, but rather with nedarke shalom, because of peaceful relations. You don't want, even if they don't technically belong to him, you don't want people barging in there and taking them.
But you still have to chase them?
You still have to send away the mother bird before. Well, that's what we have to figure out. Who has to send it away? Right. That's what we're going to
ask. That's what take it away. Somebody has to go to the guy's property to take it away?
No, we're saying two different things. We're saying, the pastures, it sounds like we're saying that, it sounds like we're saying that whoever it is that wants to take the eggs has to send away the mother bird first. However, nobody except the owner of the property is allowed to do that from Nedak Kishal. That's what it sounds like. Well, let's figure it out. If we're going to agree with what Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says, that his chatzar is koneh, even if he doesn't know it's there, if we assume that it means chayovin b'shiluach, if we assume that it means the owner of the property himself, if he wants to take the eggs, has to first send away the mother, why? It's a case of ki yikore prat lemezuman. As opposed to when it's already set up for you from beforehand, if the eggs already belong to him because they're in his chatzar, he's koneh them via kinyan chatzar. Fine, the mother we can argue is not koneh of a kinyan chatzar because she can fly away. As we learned, it only works for something which is going to stay in the chatzar. The eggs are going to stay in the chatzar. He should have been koneh them on that basis, according to Rabbi Yosef of Chanina. Therefore, it's already considered mezuman. It's already considered something that's already set up. It's already his. It's already available to him. And therefore, you shouldn't have to do shalach kam.
It's time for the bird, mother birds. It's still going to be there.
But that's neither here nor there.
It's just not a lacha.
Okay, that's very nice that we have this deeper idea that it's because of the tzar of the bird, of the mother bird, etc. The fact of the matter is, halacha is halacha. If the halacha is you're allowed to take them and you're not worried about the tzar of the mother bird, then so be it. You know, we say in brachas anyway that if a person says in davening we shouldn't say that in davening, because what are you saying? Like the Eivishter only has rachmanos. First of all, you're claiming as if the mitzvah is only because of rachmanos. There's no deeper reason to it. And also, you're saying the rachmanos is only on birds. What about other animals? What about the fact you're allowed to shecht animals, etc.? So the reasons are all very nice, but they don't dictate what the halacha is. So, in other words, once it's mezuman, once it's already ready for you in your property, then it should be yours, and therefore, why are we saying you have to do shalach hakan on it? Amar Rava, so Rava says, because there's a difference when one comes into play versus the other. The egg becomes chayev in shiloach hakan as soon as most of it has come out of the mother. Even while the mother is in the process of, the mother bird is in the process of laying the egg, if you wanted that egg, you would first have to get the mother bird out of there. If, practically speaking, it means you'd have to wait till the egg is laid. But the point remains, in other words, if you wanted to take the egg before the mother had laid it, fine. You don't have to send away nothing. You can check the mother bird and take the unfinished eggs, or even the finished eggs, or whatever, that are inside it. Or when that's right. Or when it first starts being laid. But once most of the egg has come out of the mother,
not to keep the egg.
Right. The point is, in other words, the mitzvah is, if you want the egg, send away the mother bird. Once the egg is mostly out of the mother, then already shiloach hakan takes effect. But it doesn't. He's not actually clean of the egg till it actually falls into his chaser. Only at that point, when it actually comes into his chaser, when it's actually laid in the nest. Is he koine? Therefore, there is a point, there is a period of time there where it's chayev and shilalach and where it's not yet his. That would be what the Braise is saying.
When? I mean,
during that period, during those few seconds while the egg is finished being laid. If he wanted the egg at that point, he would have to wait until the mother finishes laying it, or no, he would have to send away the mother bird in order to be able to take that egg. But to actually be koine the egg, he's not koine it until it lands in his property.
So one second.
I knew you'd object to that. When we say that she is chayev in the mitzvah of shiloach hakan, it means before it falls into his chaser. Which means you could have, let's say, a case. Imagine, for example, the mother bird is in her nest in your chaser. She starts laying the egg. In the course, while she's laying the egg, once most of the egg has come out, then let's say she flies out of your chaser. The egg lands on the ground there outside your chaser. You were chayev in shiloach hakan from when that egg came mostly out. At that point, you would have had to send away the mother bird before you could take that egg. You're not allowed to take that egg at that point. But now, you never ended up being koneh with kinyan chaser, because by the time it came completely out and landed on the ground, it's not in your chaser anymore. So there you go. You have a situation where you're chayev in shiloach hakan without having been koneh.
If it came out
mostly, you become chayev in shiloach hakan. From those few seconds until it actually drops to the ground, which then you koneh at kinyan chaser, it's not yours yet.
Who made the takana that it has to be mostly?
What do you mean the takana? It's not that takana. Once it's mostly out, then it's considered already laid. The same way as in halacha for many other birds.
It's this way. Who says it? Instead of saying that once the leg is completely laid out, it's
same principle as we say, for example, as far as human and animal births, that once either most of the baby or the baby's head, as the case may be, is out, then the baby is considered already born for all purposes in halacha. Here, it's an egg.
Okay, you know, I'm asking, where do we get that from?
When we learn Masechta Brachos, we'll learn about it. We learn from Petarech and whatever. In general, we say in halacha, rubei kekulei. Most of something is considered like all of it.
Probably in kolin as well.
Okay, anyway. That's how it is. Once most of the egg is out, then it's considered that it's as if it's already laid.
It's
but
not
you weren't kind of.
Why is it not viable?
I don't understand. It anyway has to be intubated for a few days. How is it any less intubatable? If you were, let's say, imagine you were to shech the mother bird at that point. You know what? Actually, never mind what I was saying about, let's say, the bird flies away. Here's a better example. Suppose that when we say you chayv in shiloach hakan, now if you violate that by taking the mother bird without sending her away, you're over on a loisa. Normally, you can take care of it by, you send away the mother bird after the fact. You said there's a lava nitikla. But the Rambam writes, for example, let's say you were to clip the mother bird's wings or shecht her or whatever, so it's impossible for her to fly away afterwards, then you would indeed be chayev malchus. So let's take our example over here. The egg is, because now you don't have a way for filling the essay anymore. So imagine, for example, this egg is partially laid. You then have a mitzvah of shiloach hakan, we're saying. Now, before the egg is completely laid, you went, let's say, and instead of sending away the mother bird, you went and shechted it. You will be chayev malchus. We can't say the egg is yours, it's already mezuman, therefore you're not chayev in shiloach hakan, because it became chayev in shiloach hakan before you owned it. At that point, while it's still in the process of being laid, you have a mitzvah of shiloach hakan, and you didn't. Okay.
Trying to get the sources of
that. The source of ruba is because ruba kekula. In general, in halacha, most of something is considered like all of it. In general, that's how it is.
If you're trying to shut the bird, and what happens to be that giving the bird to egg, you didn't know about it.
So we're not talking about you didn't know. We know that you're doing it because you wanted the egg, and then you wanted the egg, and instead of sending away the mother bird, you decided to shecht her and take the egg as well. So now you're chayv malchus.
Okay. Okay, it's not just a bird with like making a hand runs away.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is this isn't what he did. Okay. The question is, fine. Why are we saying the eggs are also Mishum Gezel? They didn't even fall into his kotzer yet. In what sense can we say that that it's also Mishum Gezel? The Braith said, Vasturus Mishum Gezel,
it doesn't fall before the correct sense.
No, it lands in the nest, whatever. Whatever, it lands in the nest, on the floor, whatever, yeah.
That's what
he's saying. Yeah, that's what I mean. The answer is A'iman. What we mean is, when we say Gezel, the Darke Shalom means the mother bird, because even though it is true that the birds don't actually belong to him, but they do nest over here in his bird house or in his attic or whatever, he expects that these birds are going to be returning there all the time. Therefore, for somebody else to come and take them would be awesome if they Darke Shalom, even though they're not technically his. The Iboy Seymel O'Olam HaBeisim, or another possibility you could say is that the Asodas Gezel does mean the eggs, because Umidinofik Rube Daike Elovei. Once most of the egg comes out, already the person has in mind, I intend to be koine that egg as soon as it comes completely out. Therefore, we can say, if somebody, it's true, he wasn't technically koine at that point yet, there wasn't kinyan chaser. However, since it's going to come out, and he expects to, then therefore for somebody else to take it, would be a violation of that. Well, again, kinyan chaser means it has to actually land in his chaser. But, before it landed in his chaser, or in his attic, whatever we're talking about, his property, it's not technically his yet. However, it would be a violation of Darkei Shalom for somebody else to go and take it at that point.
I don't know if I understand, but himself, yes, Sukhakam, but it's hanging in his,
it doesn't matter.
It's hanging in his cut.
Fine, but he has a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan until it actually lands. That's what we're saying. Yeah. The Hashtag Amr of Yehuda Amr Rab also Liskus Vibetim calls Mansha Emir Betis Aleim. Now, though, the Gemara says, in a later time, they figured out a new angle on this. We know, there's a din that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, also Lizkus Bebetzim calls Mansha Im Rebetzis Alehem. You are not allowed to be Zoicha in the eggs as long as the mother is nesting on them. In other words, before you've done the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, the eggs are off limits to you. You're not allowed to be Zoicha.
Even partially out.
No, never mind partially out. They're sitting there in the nest. And the mother is sitting on them, incubating them, whatever. You're not allowed to be Zoicha in the eggs at that point. We don't say, in other words, you don't say, I can take the eggs, I'll be zoche in them, then I'll send away the mother bird. You're not allowed to do that. Shenema, shaleach t'shalach ha'im, because the pasuk says, first you should send away the mother, v'hoder v'etabonim tikach loch, and only then the children you should take for yourself. In that case, now that we have that din, then we can understand the braisa differently. Afilu teima d'noflo lo chaseri. We could say, never mind cases where the egg is partially laid, whatever. The egg was completely laid. The egg is sitting in the nest over there in his chaser. However, why is he not coining it with Kenyan Chot? So why do we say if somebody else...
Does it repeat Shalach V'Shalach? Yeah. We learn that?
Yes. No, it's just from the order of the Pasuk. Shalach V'Shalach, and then V'Asayim V'Asabarim Tikach Loch. It's in that order. So therefore, Afilu Teimed the Nafla Lechatzer. So therefore, you can even say the egg was already laid. It's completely in his Chotzer. So why is he not coining it with Kenyan Chotzer? Why does he have a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan? And why, if anybody else takes it, is it only Mipnei Darkei Shalom? Because... Because any place where he himself would be able to be zoche in it, chaser is zachele, then his chaser is able to be zoche in it on his behalf. But if he himself is also at this point to be zoche in it, chaser is zachele, then his chaser can't be zoche in it for him either. Since the Torah is asking him to take these eggs before sending away the mother bird, therefore it means he is not able to make a kinyan on them, therefore his chaser can't make a kinyan on them either.
He never was able to make a kinyan on them in the first place.
Therefore he has a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan. Therefore he has a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan first, because not Pratman the woman. And if anybody else were to take these eggs, it would only be an issue of Darkei Shalom. I mean, they'd be over on the Issur themselves. But from the point of view of Gezel, it would only be Darkei Shalom, because they don't belong to him yet.
Even if the Balabas knows and sees that it's happening,
it doesn't matter. It's not his yet.
Then the question is,
Darkei Shalom. What are you saying, Gezel and Darkei Shalom? It seems almost like contradictory. If you're talking after the owner of the place did Shiloh HaKan, then for anybody to take the eggs would be total gezel, because now at this point they belong to the Balabas. And if he didn't do Shiloh HaKan yet, then he himself has the Isser. So never mind them, it's fine, gezel, not gezel. He himself is over on the Isser that we just said. How is that other person himself able to be zoche in those eggs? That's what the Gemara, but cotton delav by Shiloh. We're talking about that there's a cotton. Involved who does not have the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, which means, Tosfos explains, that what we mean is like this. This cotton did not do Shelo Hakan. He took the eggs without sending away the mother bird first. If he had sent them away, fine. If he had sent them, it doesn't matter, knowingly or unknowingly. He's not chayiv in mitzvah. Therefore, so if the mother bird had been sent away by the cotton or anybody else, again, anybody can, then the owner of the chotzer can now be zocher in the eggs, and for anybody to take them would be gezel. Like this, where cotton took the eggs, then, okay, he's not supposed to do it, but you can't say that he's a gazlan, you can't, more to the point, you can't say that he has the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan, you can't say he's not allowed to take the eggs before sending away the mother bird. He's a cotton, he's potter from mitzvah, he's not yet chayv in mitzvah.
He walked his own property.
Okay, that's why I'm afraid.
So what happens? You still have to do the...
Well, somebody is going to have to do Shiloh HaKan, that's the point. But at least the cotton has not, the cotton we cannot say has been over on this thing, Shaleach to Shalach, and then there's a bottom to Kachlach, because he's a cotton. Fine. The question is, cotton by Dakhe Shalom? Who? Fine. So are we imposing Dakhe Shalom on a cotton? Same logic. If the cotton is not considered chayiv in mitzvahs of Shiloh HaKan, he's not chayiv in the mitzvahs of Gezel either, or the Takanas that are bottom surrounding that. The answer is Hachakama. Ovib Shah cotton. Chayiv lahasulem ne Dakhe Shalom. What we mean is the father of that child is going to have to return the egg that his son took mifne Dakhe Shalom.
To the balabas.
Okay, that's the bird. In other words, what's going to have to happen is like this. This kid took the egg without having done Shiloh HaKan. Fine. The cotton is not chayiv in the mitzvah of Shiloh. But his father is. But no, the point is that afterwards, after the owner of the property does Shiloh HaKan, now the father of the kid who took the eggs is going to have to return them because they were supposed to be his, Lachatchila, and Mepnei Dakhe Shalom, we make him give them back.
Provided that the son comes back.
Well, yeah. All right.
And it's so obvious now that you know.
If she doesn't come back, what egg would develop?
If the cotton doesn't come back?
No, the cotton comes back, yeah. But the cotton is gone because he took the egg.
Oh, well, because the mother was sent away. That's Shiloh HaKan. Whatever, it doesn't matter whether the
egg does it become a hard, at what point does it become a hard-boiled egg?
When it gets cooked.
No, that's what I was like. When it becomes right to eat it, before cooking, but it should be not chickens being
egg. No, well, during the first couple of days, before it's been sat on, then like this, it's a freshly laid egg, so it's still edible. It would have to be sat on for a couple of days in order to become
edible. Oh, so when he brings it back, it's still used.
It's still
usable. Cook it.
Yeah. Or you could use it to raise more eggs. You could use it to raise more birds, whatever.
No, but it takes less meat to eat
that. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamaskir bais b'chaveru l'shana. If somebody rents a house, so continuing on the topic of renting houses from the previous Mishnah, somebody rents a house to somebody else for a year, what does a year mean? Does it mean 12 months, or does it mean a calendar year? Nis'abra shana, nis'abra l'sofer. Well, then if it ends up being an ibur year, then it's to the benefit of the tenant. He gets the extra month. Hiskur lo l'chadoshim, but if he rented it to him on a monthly basis, nis'abra shana, nis'abra l'maskir, if there's an ibur year, then the maskir, the landlord, is entitled to the rent for the extra month.
That's obvious.
Well, wait. Ma'ase b'tzipori be'echad shasacha merchatz mechaber b'shnei matzah zahav l'shana midina zahav l'chodesh. It happened once in Tzipori that somebody rented a back house from somebody else for 12 gold dinar a year. At one dinner a month. In other words, they said both. It's going to be 12 dinner per year and one dinner per month. And it was a neighbor here. The case came to Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rav Yosi for a din Torah. And they said, since it's a Sopik, we should need to divide because he pays half the rent for the Iber month.
Let me ask you a question.
The guy covered, why don't you, before you ask the questions, why don't we learn the Gemara and see if your questions are answered in it? Wait, that's one of the questions.
There you go.
Okay. So you want to ask Maisa Lister? You're telling me a story that contradicts the premise? First, we were saying that the extra month either is all belongs to the tenant, he gets it for free, or it belongs all to the landlord, he has to pay the whole thing. Now you're saying in the second part of the Mishnah that they split it?
Right.
Yeah. The answer is Chsurim Master. The Mishnah is missing words. V'hachek Kafani. It means to say like this. If he said both of those things, that it'll be 12 gold dinner for the year, one gold dinner per month, then they split it, for reasons which we will discuss. Such a case happened in Tzipori. So the Mishnah is being consistent. The Mishnah is telling us one case where they mention the year or they mention the month, and a third case where they mention both, the year and the month.
Well, this last case we had mentioned both. I think the Balabas was covering both bases. He covered it for a regular year that it's 12 months, and he covered himself for it. If it's more, he said per month.
But he should have said so. He should have said that. It means.
No,
that's what he said. He said 12 dinner per year, one dinner per month. So what does that mean? Does it mean 12 per year, even if it's 13-month year, or does it mean one dinner per month, and therefore it's a 13-month year, I want 13 dinners?
It's not covered both.
Right. Omer Rav, so Rav says, Ihavoi Hosem, if I had been there at the time when that din Torah took place, that action in the Mishnah, have a Yehivin like Kulul Maskir, I would have disagreed with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yossi, and I would have said that everything should go to the landlord, that he's entitled to the full rent for the 13th month. So the question is, my Kamash Malon, Tvois Loshen Acharon. So what does Rav want to tell us by that? He wants to tell us that he holds that you should go according to the last Loshen, meaning what do we have over here? He said 12 dinner per year, one dinner per month. If we look at the second statement that he made, the second statement is saying one dinner per month. So a little bit like you're saying, not really, because you could argue one about the other way around. If he said one dinner per month, 12 dinner per year. But if we want to say that Rav is saying you go according to the last Loshen, whatever the last thing that was said is the one that's dispositive, and in that case, by the way, it doesn't mean, I mean, Rav is an Amora, he can't really argue with the Tanoim. But you have in other places in Shas, you have Rav, I think it's Rameyer, for example, who says the concept of Tvois Loshen Acharon, I think we learned it in Nedarim. So Rav would be saying, in other words, I would have disagreed on that premise that they're saying that you have to look at both Loshonis. I would have said, right, so is it just that he's saying Tvois Loshen Acharon? But we find that Rav already said that din a different time, the concept of Tvois Loshen Acharon, that you ignore the first statement and you focus only on the last one. Namely, because Rav Huna said, Amri Bei Rav, they say in the yeshiva of Rav the following din. If somebody says to somebody else, I owe you, or I'm going to sell you something, or whatever, for istira mea moi. If somebody said, now, an istira is a denomination of coin. Rashi tells us it's the Sela Medina that we learned about back in Ksubas and whatever. It's a coin that nominally has the value of a Sela, but really 7/8 of it are copper and only 1/8 of it is silver. So it's worth 1/8 of a Sela Tsuri. You have Sela Tsuri, which is pure silver or almost pure silver, and then you have a Sela Medina, which is worth 1/8 of that. An istira is a Sela Medina. It's half a dinar. It equals 96 prutas. So now this person said, an istira, 100 prutas, mayamoy, 100 prutas, or mayamoy, then the din is he owes 100 moys, 100 prutas. And mayamoy istira, if he says the other way around, 100 ma and istira, then he only owes istira. So we see already that Rav says, Tvois Loshen Acharon. So what do we need him to be telling us in our Mishnah as well? The answer is imehosam havamin a perushi kamafarish. Because if you only had that case, you could argue that it's not a question of Tvois Loshen Rishon or Tvois Loshen Acharon. You could argue that the second statement he's making is meant to clarify what he means by the first one. In other words, we're saying normally an istira consists of 96 mars. But you can have a better quality istira, for example, that consists of 100 prutas, 100 mois, whatever. Or the other way around, you could have lower quality mois, of which it takes 100 of them to make the value of an istira. The value of an istira or the value of a ma can fluctuate a little bit depending on the quality of the coins, depending, as we look back in Hazav, how rubbed out they are, etc. So you would think maybe when he says istira mea moi or mea moi istira, it just means that Maybe when he says istira mea moi, and we're saying he owes 100 mois, what does he mean? Maybe we understand him to mean, not that I'm taking back what I said istira. I mean a better quality istira, the kind that it takes 100 prutas to equal. Or the other way around, when he says istira mea moi, then he means 100 of the, I'm going to pay you 100 of the lower quality mois, which make what would normally take 96 good mois to make one regular istira. So it's not
below the limit, the 96. Otherwise, it's not an istira. If it goes to 95 or 92 or whatever.
Well, I guess they're all silver coins. I guess, well, prutas aren't silver, but I guess it could fluctuate like that. But ordinarily, the minimum is 96. But if he's saying 100, then maybe he means a better quality istira, or maybe he means worse quality mice. So it's not tois loshen rishon or loshen achron. It's just he's clarifying what he's saying. So you wouldn't know that. Kamash malon, that is the chiddush from our Mishnah. That no, from what Rav says on our Mishnah, he really does mean tois loshen achron. He really does mean even when you can't say that one of them is just clarifying the other, even when there is an outright contradiction between them. Like in this case, a 13-month. If you say a dinner per month, there's no way that you can say that a 13-month year is going to be only 12 dinner. It's a complete contradiction. And yet Rav is saying tois loshen achron, as opposed to the case of the Mois and the Estira, where it is possible to reconcile them.
Can I ask you about Bei Rav? Was that Tzura?
Probably, yeah. I mean, Bei Rav sometimes in the Gemara has a more general meaning the yeshiva. But over here, sometimes it means more generally the yeshiva, sometimes it means specifically the yeshiva of Rav.
Uh-huh. And Rav Huna, was he the Rosh Hashiva from Bedisa?
Rav Huna himself was the Rosh Hashiva in Surah after Rav.
Okay, yeah. So, but there's another Rav Huna that was from Bedisa or not? So now Rav Huna.
So Rav Huna is reporting that what they said in Bei Rav, in the Yeshiva of Rav.
It's his own Yeshiva,
but he means that they said it in the name of Rav, yeah.
Okay.
Discusses a little bit another possibility that maybe the other way around, that maybe you could understand, like sort of like you were saying, that our Mishnah might mean that he's just trying to clarify the situation. That I mean 12 dinner per year, unless it's an Ebro year, in which case I want one dinner per month, as opposed to the Meir Moriz. You know, okay, Tosfos quotes that explanation from the Rashbam, but says I don't really, says I don't really like it. Tosfos says
the door.
Oh, is somebody there? Yeah. Thanks. Somebody locks
it. It seems stretched to try to infer from methods of payments the duration of the contract.
It's same difference, though. The point is, what is he saying? Okay.
Shalom Aleichem.
Okay.
Shalom. I want to make sure that he's safe.
Why should he have to miss out on what we're discussing over here? All right. Anyway, so as I was saying, Tosfos mentions that the Rashbam wants to understand the other way around. That maybe the case of our Mishnah is a case where he's just clarifying what he's saying, whereas the case of the Meir Moriz Tzira is a total contradiction, and therefore, again, we wouldn't understand from one to the other what Rav would hold in one case versus the other. Who was it?
No answer. With that answer, that's not true.
Came from
there. No one answer.
Onward. So that's Rav. Shmuel Amar. Shmuel has a different explanation. That our Mishnah is talking about Baba Emtza Chodesh Askinan. Our Mishnah is talking about if he comes in the middle of the month. Half the month has passed. It's the month of the Ibur Yer. You owe me this month's rent. Pay or get out of here. Therefore, the question basically boils down to, you asking a Moitzi Mechaver L'Varaya. The question is basically, who's the Moitzi Mechaver at this point? Do we say that On the one hand, the tenant has the chazaka on the money, but on the other hand, the owner of the place has the chazaka on the karka. He owns it to begin with. So therefore, if he comes in the middle of the month, you have that suffering. But Shmuel would say that no, if he came at the beginning of the last month, then you go according to the chazaka of the karka, and then the landlord is entitled to the full month's rent. And if he only comes at the end of the month, then the chazaka is the chazaka of the money that the socher has, that the tenant has. Okay. Now the question is, Miyom Shmuel loyam in tvois loshen achron. So are you telling me that Shmuel does not hold of this concept of tvois loshen achron? Well, Rav and Shmuel dami tavayo, but we find that Rav and Shmuel both say that if somebody says, if one person says to another, kur b'shloshim ani moichaloch, if one person says to the other, I am selling you a kur of grain or whatever it is for 30 dinar, Yochalak, the Bayafilu Basahra, no? Then he is allowed to change his mind even when it comes to the last saw, because even let's say, so the guy he's measuring out a saw, another saw, etc., to reach 30. And the guy's doing Meshicha, let's say, on each one. However, since the whole core is being sold as one unit, until he does Meshicha on the last part of it, the rest of it, the Meshicha is not complete yet. Therefore, either one of them can change their mind. They'll have to accept Meshapara, fine, but at least it can be done. No full Meshicha has been done yet. But Korbis Shloshim saw the Sela Animar Chalach. But if he says, I'm selling you a core of grain for 30 Sela, at the rate of one saw per Sela, Rishin Kana. Then each one, as he gives them the money and does the Meshicha, then he's kind of that one. If they, if 25 saw into it, he changes his mind and decides, I don't want to do it anymore, tough luck. The other guy's already been kind of the 25 saw. Because in one case, he said, he only said one Lashon. He said, I'm selling you a kur for 30 sela. So therefore, it's one unit. The whole kur together is one unit. It's all one sale. As opposed to the second case is he's breaking it down. Well, one way of looking at it is it's still one sale because he said kur b'shloshim. But he also said saw b'sela. And therefore, we treat it as if it was 30 separate purchases of one sela each. So as soon as he does his meshicha on the first one, he's kind of that one. The second one, he's kind of that one, etc. So therefore, and so there you see twice lashon acharon l'chora. So we see that Shmuel does agree twice lashon acharon. Why doesn't he say the same thing in our Mishnah? The answer is Hassan, time and Mishnah the toughest. Yeah, but you know what the reason is over there? That we say that the guy, once he did Meshicha on the first one, is kind of the second one, on the second one, he's kind of the second one, because Shmuel has a Suffolk Taka, the same Suffolk as he has over here, which is why he said if it came in the middle of the month, you have to split it. Well, the difference is that the Lekeach over there has the Chazakah, he has the grain in his possession at that point. Therefore, if we follow the Chazakah, fine, he has it in his possession. So he has it in his possession. Hachanami katofis. Well, very well. Over here, one or the other of them is tofis. Either you can look at it from the point of view of the socher, it's tofis the money. He hasn't paid it yet. He still has it in his possession. Or the other guy has a chazaka on the karka. Therefore, fine. He's being consistent. You do have a suffix, no matter what. In that case, though, the suffix tells us to go on the side of the lekeach because he already has the grain in his possession. He already did meshicha on it. Over here, you have a suffix. Which one? Over here, in the middle of the month.
As soon as the renter has the money in hand, is that what we're saying?
The renter has the money to begin with. He has the money in his bank.
Right.
At some point during that month, he would have had to pay it to the master, to the landlord. Now, like this, it's the middle of the month, there's a suffix. Do we go according to the chazakah of the money, or do we go according to the chazakah of the land? Therefore, yachlosu. Whereas over there, all the grain is in the guy's hand.
Different situation.
That's opinion number two. Now comes opinion number three, Rav Nachman Amar. Rav Nachman says, no, never mind that. We go according to the chazaka of the owner. So not like Rav says that tois moshen acharon, that depends which thing he said last. Not like Shmuel says that depends when in the month he came. Even if he came on the last day of the month, he would be entitled to the full chodesh
eber.
Well, the halacha is usually like Rav Nachman and Dinim Amin speak. Okay, the question is, my kamashmol and tois moshen acharon. Fine, what is Rav Nachman telling us effectively? He's telling us that you go according to the last moshen, and he's saying exactly the same thing as Rav. The answer is afagav the apich mepach. But even if he said it the other way around, according to Rav, what if he had said one dinner per month, 12 dinner per year?
Right.
According to Rav, you would say, well, the second lashon is the one that takes precedence. Therefore, it's only 12 dinner, and the guy gets the chodesh eber for free. According to Rav Nachman, no. Regardless what order you set in, fine, you may have a suffix, but the suffix is answered by the fact that the landlord has chazaka on the karka. Therefore, he is entitled to that 13th month.
He's got the yada in a way.
In that sense, yeah.
That's the difference.
That's the difference, yeah. Okay. Fine. Bo'me name Rav Yanai. Okay, now they asked Rav Yanai a related question. Socher omer nasati or master omer lo natalti. What happens if they're arguing about whether the payments were done or not? The socher says, I paid the rent. The master says, I never received it. Al mila ha viraya. Who has to bring the viraya, whether it was paid or not? So the Gemara asks, Amos. When is this suffix coming up? At what point during the term of the rental is this coming up that you have the question? If it's talking about during the period, let's say he rented it for a year, so you're talking about sometime during that year, they're arguing. We have a Mishnah that in Masechta Bechoros, from which we can learn the din about that. Ilachazman, it's an in, and we have that Mishnah also tells us, we can also infer from it, what would be the din if it was Lachazman, if it was after the time. So what do you need to ask the question? Namely like this. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Bechoros like this. Mesa Avvesech Shloshim Yom. We know there's a mitzvah of pidyon haben. The father has to be poyde his son. You're not poyde him during the first 3 days. The pasuk says, "Duryav mi ben chodesh tifteh." After you redeem them once they're a month old. The basic reason for it is because until a baby is a month old, they're suffic nafel. They may rachman olplan. They're not fully viable yet. But whatever it is, there's a cost of that. It's not supposed to be done before 30 days. In that, it could conceivably happen though that you still give it to the kohen ahead of time. So. Suppose the father of this baby dies within the 30 days after the baby was born. We have a chazaka that the baby has not yet had pidyon haben. And therefore the child himself will have the responsibility to arrange for his own pidyon haben when he gets older, unless somebody else does it for him, whatever. I think he himself would have been part of himself then, yeah. Unless proof can be brought that the pidyon did in fact happen, that he did in fact give the money to the kohen. It could happen, but Rashi says, halavai, a person should pay his debt at the right time. You certainly don't expect people to pay off their debts early. We can't assume that the father paid it off early. Therefore, the chazaka is, yeah. But if it's after 30 days, then it's the other way around. We have a chazaka that the pidyon did happen, because Pashtos, the guy did it when he was responsible to. Ad shiyom relosh lo nifta, until people tell this baby when he grows up, we happen to know that your father never did a pidyon haben. He Rashi says shu tzivu b'shas moza, that he actually told us before he died that he never did a pidyon haben. Rashi points out, by the way, an interesting thing. When it comes to the first part of the Mishnah, we say shiyovi raya. Doesn't mean that you can't say, so in the first case, Yavi Raya would be the child himself who would have to bring the Raya, that he had a pidyon haben, and if not, then he's on the hook for it. In the second case of it here, you can't say we should make the kohen bring a proof, because what kohen? There's many kohenim in the world. The guy could always say, I don't have to do the pidyon haben by you, I could just as well do it by somebody else. So it's not that anybody has to bring a raya. That's why it's only ad shiyovi. Once the neighbors inform him, you should know, you never had a pidyon haben, then it's just his responsibility to arrange it. Okay. Anyway, the bottom line.
He's considered,
garnished. I mean, he hasn't done the mitzvah. He hasn't done the mitzvah. That's right. You have a mitzvah of pidyon haben until that. Just it hasn't been done. That's all.
He can be done over every day after.
No, that's not like Bris Miller where you're over every day now.
It can be done any time.
In principle, yeah. I mean, you should do it as soon as possible. Anyway, the bottom line is, referring back to our case of a year, well, before and after 30 days with a bechor is the equivalent of before after a year if you're renting a house or whatever. Same kind of thing. If you're doing during the year, if you want to claim during the year that you paid the rent, when lechorah the rent is only due at the end of the year. Again, we're talking according to what the Gemara says, schiros ein mishtalem esel olasayif, that rent is usually only payable at the end of the term. I mean, in modern terms, it's not like that. You know, we all know that you're usually supposed to pay at the beginning of the month. But whatever, different places, different. But if it's the kind of place where you pay at the end of the term, then it should be the same kind of thing. If you're talking during the term, then the chazaka should be you haven't paid it, unless you have proof otherwise. If it's after the term, the chazaka should be you did pay it. Why are they asking the question to Rav Yanai when they have an answer right there in the Mishnah? The answer is like tzricha b'yoma de mishlem zimra. Yes, but the question that they had to ask him is what if it's on the very day that the thing is up? So later that day, for example, the landlord takes him to Beis Din and says the year is up. You're supposed to be paying rent today. Where is it? And the other guy says, I paid it to you this morning. And he says, what are you talking about? I never received it. So the question is, mi obid inish to part of yom de mishlam zimnei eloi. Do we expect that a person pays off his debt, or in this case his rental, on the actual day when the term is up, or not? Maybe he will pay it, but not necessarily on that day. That could be the question. We have another Mishnah that can answer that question. Later on in our Masechta, in the next Perek, the second half of the next Perek is going to deal with the dinim part of next Perek is going to deal with the dinim of paying workers. So the Mishnah says over there, Socher Bizmana Nishba Venoto, that a hired worker on in his time, meaning on the day, we know the Torah says, you have a mitzvah to pay a worker on the day he finished the job, or the following night, or whatever, as we'll learn the details over there, at the time when during which he's supposed to be paid, nishba v'noitel, then he's able to swear that he didn't yet receive his salary, and he can collect on that basis. This is a takana of the Chachamim, because, as we'll learn on the next line of the Gemara, let's see it right inside of the Gemara. So in the case of a socher, the Rabbanan imposed a shvuah on him in order to be able to collect mishum de balabais torah v'payalah, because we can assume the balabas is busy with his workers. So he has a lot of different workers working for him. He may get mixed up. You can't make him swear, I didn't pay you, and then be potter, because he has a lot of different workers working for him. He may get mixed up. He thought he paid Reuven when really he paid Shimon. Therefore, instead, what the Chachamim did is, the whole concept, again, of swearing and collecting is midrabanan, midaraisa, you only swear in order to be potter. In this case, the Chachamim said, rather than the balabas swearing and becoming potter, we don't want to do that, because it may end up being a false shvuah without him even realizing it. He may think that he really paid this guy and really he paid one of his other workers. Therefore, instead, the Chachamim say, you, worker, should swear that you didn't receive it yet, and then you can collect. So in that case, we make him swear. But over here, on the day when the term is up, then we will allow. We'll do the usual rule. You swear in order to be potter. The socher should swear that he paid, and he should be potter. We should believe him with a shvur. Actually, to be exact, it wouldn't be a shvur. It wouldn't be a shvur satarda. Rashi says it would actually be a shvur midrabanan, because he's not modu b'mitzvah. He's koy per hakel. He's claiming I paid the whole thing, so it would only be a shvur tesis. But whatever. The point is, it would still follow the usual rules of a shvur that you swear in order to be potter rather than the other guy swearing in order to collect.
Even though it's drabanan.
So there's the answer then. So yes, on the day when the term. So far what we have is as follows. If the socher claims during the term I paid, then we don't accept that without some kind of proof. If it's on the very day that the term is up, if the lease is up, then we'll allow him to take a shavuah and be potter. And if it's any time after that, then we'll accept his claim that he paid, and the other guy is going to have to bring proof. The landlord is going to have to bring proof that he wasn't paid.
Okay, but when does he have the obligation to pay?
He has the obligation to pay at the end of the term.
The last day.
So that's the thing. On the last day, that's what we're talking about.
The case is on the last day.
That is when, if he claims that he paid and the other guy claims I didn't receive it, we will make him take a shavuot to that effect. Because the fact of the matter is,
is on the last day,
yeah,
and not before.
Yeah.
But you never have the guy who's the owner of property squares.
Yeah, that's the point, right? Okay. No. Another din. Omer Rava. If somebody rented a house to somebody else for 10 years, because of Leishtara, and he wrote him out a shtar, that I've rented it to you for 10 years. Now, what the situation is over here, there's a couple of different explanations. Let's first start with Rashi. Rashi says, the situation is, he wrote out a shtar that I rented you this property for 10 years, but he didn't write a date when it began. Later on, the case comes to Beis Din, and he says, and the landlord says, you've already been living here for 5 years. You should know you only have 5 years left. The other guy, let's say, claims and says, no, I've only been living here 3 years. Meheman, the balabais is believed, because again, any case when you have a suffix, he has the chazaka on the karka, and therefore that's the stronger thing.
That could allow any fraud.
You write the date in the shtar. Wait. And by that logic, if he's saying that you're going to believe him because he has the chazak on it, what if one person lends somebody else 100 zuz using a shtar? Later on, the loiva claims I paid you back half. Are you going to say he's believed because he has a chazak on the money? Obviously not. He's a moid of a mitzvah. Why should it be any different over here?
Mm-hmm.
So Ravina answers, how do you think to compare these two cases? In that case, why do you write a shtar? In order to be able to collect.
Okay.
No, in the case of the loan,
the money.
You write a shtar in it in order to be able to collect the loan. In Issa de Pare, so if he had indeed paid off half the loan, he should have written on that shtar itself, half of it has been paid off, or maybe to write a shover, to write a receipt for half the amount and let the loiva hold on to the receipt.
Oh, okay.
But over here, in the case of the 10-year rental, on the lay, the landlord will say to the tenant, "Hi, the chsivi lachshtara. The only reason I wrote for your shtar kiyeched my techsak Allah because I did not want you to be, to claim a chazaka on it. I don't want you to. I don't want you to claim. I didn't mean. In other words, Rashi says, look, there's no date on the shtar. There's no date on the shtar. The point of the shtar was not going to be any time I come to you, you're going to say, well, 10 years just started last week or 3 years ago or what have you. Obviously, 10 years are going to be 10 years at some point. The reason I wrote the shtar is to prevent you from claiming after 3 years, you know what, I have a chazaka on this place I own.
So if
there's a valid reason for me to be able to say now at this point, 5 years have passed. You can't expect that every time when a year has passed that I'm going to come and mark up the shtar and note what the how much time is in it.
Let me ask you, the shtar is considered valid?
Why not?
Because he wrote the shtar to begin with to prevent the other guy from having a chazaka after 3 years, and he omits the date. And we're saying the shtar is valid?
Yeah. All it means is that if the other guy ever claims I have a chazak on it, this shtar will be brought to Beis Din. It'll show it's not a sale, it's a rental.
It'd be an old shtar to 20 years ago.
Then you would have to, if you want to have a chazaka, we will learn this in Bava Basra, kol chazaka she'eni matayna ein chazaka. In order to have a valid chazaka, you have to have some kind of valid claim. For example, I bought this property, I inherited it, I whatever. If you just say, for example, well, this property was available, so I squatted on it, that's not a valid chazaka. In this case, we will bring out the shtar. It's a 10 years
together, so
let's say he has proof he was there for 3 years. Fine, but we will bring out the shtar. It shows that he only rented it, therefore no chazaka. Now, with that said though, there are other explanations, especially because some of the Rishonim point out what's the logic of it. Why would you keep the shtar by the renter? In that case, the renter has the incentive. He could just destroy the shtar, and now there's no proof.
Why, I figured that they both had matching star.
Maybe, I don't know, and that's not what we seem to be saying over here, but okay. Anyway, so Tosfos quotes from Rabbi Hananel that rather the situation is over here that, no, the star is dated, but it's dated. It says, I rented this property for 10 years at the rate of X amount per year.
With a date.
With a date. Now, though, what we're saying, the argument after 5 years is that the Socher now comes, unlike Rashi, where the Maskil is bringing the case to Din Torah and saying you've already been here 5 years, according to Rabbi Hananel, it's the other way. And it's Socher that's bringing the Din Torah and saying you should know, I've already paid you 5 years worth of that rent. Nikita, you are holding in your hands already 5 years worth of the rent, which I paid you. And the other guy says, no, you've only paid me less than that. So now we're saying that that Meheman, that he's believed with a Shavuot.
Who is believed?
There's a socher. He would be believed with a shavua. He would have to swear because he's a moedim mikdash. That he paid the 5 years worth that he said, and then that's it. Yeah. Okay. Now going back to we're setting aside the question of renting houses, and now we're going to get back to rent it. Now from here till the Mishnah, we're going to get back to a couple of miscellaneous dinim as far as renting objects. Amar of Nachman, Shoyel Adam B'tuvay La'olam. A person is allowed to borrow something B'tuvay forever. So what does B'tuvay mean? Rashi explains, as long as the thing is good, as long as the thing is usable. Tosfos quotes from the Aruch that says that B'tuvay means basically that I'll owe you a favor. You'll allow me to use this thing whenever I want, and you'll owe me a favor, and I'll owe you a favor for it. Anyway, you're allowed to borrow that La'olam. You're allowed to borrow that indefinitely, and even let's say, so you returned it at one point, you don't need it anymore, you would be able to take it back whenever you want without having to ask the guy again and continue using it. Because you lechatchila arranged with him betuvah, that whenever I want, I'm going to be able to borrow it. But the Rambam explains it yet a different way, that betuvah means basically you're a nice guy, so I'm trusting you for that I'll be able to take it whenever I want. Omer of Mori, brother of Shmuel, sort of Mori, the grandson of Shmuel, says, well, would you call him in a? Only if you make a kinyan on that. Otherwise, if you don't make a kinyan on that, then we don't say the tovay. Once you return it the first time, that's it. You can't borrow it again without the guy's permission. But if you made a kinyan, then fine. Omer of Mori, brother of Ashi, umahadale kate. And Ramori, brother of Ashi, says, in that case, if you are allowed to borrow it the tovay, you, when it comes to the point that it's not usable anymore, you return him the handle of it. Meaning, in other words, you don't say, for example, now look, the guy didn't give it to you as a present. He lent it to you, after all. once it comes to the point that it's not usable anymore, you don't have the ability to say, okay, well, I'll fix it, I'll make it usable again, and I'll continue using it. No, you return him. Oh, that's Jakob Solis outside. He just texted me.
Yeah, I have a special ring for this.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. So you can't fix it. You can't fix it. What you do is, once it gets to the point that it's not usable anymore, you return him whatever broken pieces are left. If all that's left is the handle, you return him the handle. But you have to return him something. You have to return him something of what's left of it. You can't just fix it you can't just fix it and continue using it, because that would amount to that he gave it to you as a present, and he didn't give it to you as a present. He only lent it to you. Another din related to that, Amar Rava, Hai man de Amar Lechavre Oishlan Moro Lemurfasei Hai Pardesa. If a person says to somebody else, lend me this rake or this shovel or whatever it is lend me this shovel
just now, and I sent them back that we're coming. And no response so far.
I wonder if that was him before then. Maybe his message just came through now. I don't know. All right, whatever.
No, it came, in 21. That might have been him banging before that. Would be.
I don't know. About. Oh, that is him. I think I hear his voice.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. What just happened? I looked at my walls to see if we're in.
Right.
Was someone else was here? No one
was on. About. All right. Anyway. All right. So. If somebody says to somebody else, lend me a spade to dig around in this particular orchard. So, okay, he's allowed to use it in that orchard, but only that one, because he only borrowed it on Manasseh. If he says Pardesa, if he just says to dig around in an orchard, Rafak they call Pardesa Dibai. It doesn't have to be one particular orchard. It can be any one, but again, only one. Pardesi, if he says, I want to use it to dig around in orchards, plural, Rafik will also call Pardesi Disle, then he can dig around in all the orchards, whichever one he wants. Even Rashi says, I feel a God or can't talk here, even if it's as big as the city of Antioch, which is a big city. And the Hagros HaGrub brings you that the Rambam says, not even in his own, he can use it in somebody else's orchard if he wants. And in the end, he has to return him, even if all that's left at the end is just the handle, he just returns him the handle, because again, he didn't lend it to him, he didn't give it to him as a present, but so he can't fix it, etc. But he, A similar din, Amar Papa, you can make a new blade for it. The handle is still usable.
Now, why does he take a lot of ticks himself?
Because if he fixed it and then continues using it, it's like the other guy gave it to him as a present. He didn't, he lent it to him. Lent it to him, betrugha, or whatever,
like
means as long as it's usable.
Like a working thing.
Okay. Yeah, no, but because you don't have to. Oishlan mora, lend me a spade. So fine. Yeah. Omer papa, haiman de omele lechavre oishlan hai gargusa. If somebody says to somebody else, lend me this place, lend me this well, lend me this well that I can use to water my field, the nafla, and the well collapses, Loy Bonile, he cannot rebuild it. He can't rebuild it. The borrower can't rebuild it and say, well, now let me continue using it. The other guy can say, look, I lent you that particular well. Now it's going to be a different well. I'm not responsible.
Well means the bricks. Well means the water it comes from.
No, it means the well. And the pashtas, yeah. But if he says gargusa, but if he doesn't say this well, he just says a well, the nafla, and it collapses. Bonile, then he can rebuild it. Because then he said, I'm going to lend you a well. Begagrusa, and if he says, lend me a place where I can, lend me a place for a well, meaning a place where I can dig a well, Koriv Ozil, Kamagagrusi Bahari, he can go start digging as many places as he needs to in his land, Admisramile, until he finds one that works as a well, the Tzorachomikni, meaning again, he needs to make a Kenyan to begin with, otherwise it's just words, and every other guy can retract any time. A regular Kenyan, Sudo, whatever, yeah. Mishnah says, Hamas divides the chaver of a nafal. If somebody rents a house to somebody else and it falls down, chayav lahamid lo bayis. He has to get him another house as long as the rental term is going on. However, if the house was a small one, then he can't unilaterally rebuild it as a big house and say, well, here, you can take this over for the rest of the rental. The other guy might say, I want it a small house. And the other way around. If it was a large house, he can't unilaterally make it small. If it was one house, he can't make it two small rooms or whatever. He can't divide it. If it was two separate rooms, he can't combine it into one. He can't reduce the number of windows or the size of the windows or increase them. Only with the das, both of them have to agree to it. To any such change.
It doesn't have to be the exact size.
No, it does have to be. That's what I'm saying.
Any change has to be
agreed by both.
So 3,000 square feet, and he builds 2,500.
The other guys may say, I don't want it. I rented a 3,000 square foot place. Yeah, so the Gemara asks, hey, Chidon, well, what's the case? If it's the case that he said, I'm renting you this house, nafal azaleh. So when it falls down, like the previous cases over here about this well or whatever, it means this specific one. Once it fell, then that's it. It's gone. So why should he have to get him another one to begin with? And if he just tells him a house, why not? Why are you not allowed to change it? I said I'm going to rent you a house. Any house that I rent you is valid for that. Who cares about the size or the number of them or whatever? No, but the case is, he said, the house that I'm renting you, he didn't say this house, but he said, the house that I'm renting you is a certain size. It's X number of feet long. So then he has to make sure that he provides them another house. Bihachi maila memra. Well, so then what's the chiddush? Ella, no. He also, Ravin, Amar Rish Lakish, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported a different version of what Rish Lakish said. You can have a third case. He says, a house like this. So it's not this house where if it collapses and there's nothing to talk about. It's not any house. It's a house like this. Still, Vakati Maila Memra. So you would think, still in that case, what's the Chiddush? Like this, Lakota means exactly like this. Because the Chiddush would be, let's say, for example, the house is near the riverbank, which is an important, it's a hush of a location. People like to live in such a location.
Even though they get flooded.
No, but the point is, it's closer to the river, so therefore it's easier for us to
do
business. So you would think maybe the landlord would have the ability to argue. When I said kazeh, I didn't mean the exact size of the house and the shape of the windows and whatnot. I meant location, location, location. Who cares if it's bigger or smaller?
Any
house close to the river, regardless of the size, regardless of the number of windows, etc. Kamash Malan, that is your Shlokish's Kiddush, that no, nevertheless, the tenant can say, kazeh doesn't mean the location, it means
exactly.
The size and the shape and the layout and whatever
and
the house. Yeah, and the location. Hadron al-Hashar. This next perek is going to be talking about, the first half of the perek anyway, is going to be talking about various cases where you hire somebody to work your field for you. We've talked about many times before the concept of an oris, where he works the field and gets a percentage of the crops. You also have, we've touched on occasionally, a choicher, who rents the property and also pays in crops, but instead of paying a certain percentage, he pays a certain fixed amount. X number of bushels of grain or whatever it is per year. We're going to go through the perek now. We're going to be dealing with the dinim that apply to these kinds of things. Some of the dinim we're going to be talking about are the same regardless whether it's an oris or a choicher. Some of them, the first couple of mishnayos. After that, we're going to be dealing with dinim that apply to one and not to the other. Because, for example, you have there can be a big difference between an oris and a choicher. Let's say you have a field where normally it produces 1,000 bushels, and one year it produces only 700. If you're an oris, your percentage that you're getting is less, and your percentage that you're giving the balabas is less, but you're still getting something out of it. If you're a choicher, it cuts into your profits. You're paying him, you're supposed to be giving him, let's say, 100 or 200 or whatever it is per year, regardless of the size of the crop. Never mind 700. What if the field only produced 200 that year? And your rental agreement is that you're paying 200 per year. You've got to give the ball boss everything, and you're ending up with nothing. But we will see, as we go through the perek, the difference of these two cases. So the Mishnah says, I'm a kavol sodom chaveri. If somebody accepts to work in a field from somebody else. He accepts responsibility for the field, and then he's going to be working it. which that word hamakabel includes both of these cases. It includes the case of the oris and includes the case of the choicher. So, makam shenagru lichter, if it's a place where the minig is to cut to cut the grain or to harvest the grain by cutting it, lichter, then you have to do that. Locker, if the minig is rather, it's the kind of place where the minig is to pull it completely out of the ground, pull it out by the roots, yakar, then you have to do it that way. Yeah. For reasons which we'll see in the Gemara. Lacharish achrov, if it's a place where the minig is that after the harvest, whichever kind of harvest it is, you afterwards have to do another plowing, which is, Rashi says, why would you do that? Because there's weeds in there, there's roots of weeds in there. The weeds are going to start growing and then taking nourishment, taking nutrition out of the field. So you want to plow afterwards in order to destroy those. So if the minig is to do that, yachrish, then you have to plow. Hakol k'minig ha-medina, everything goes according to the minig ha-medina. K'shem shechokin b'tur, now when it comes to divide, the same way as they divide by percentages or by fixed amounts or whatever, the same way as they divide the actual produce, k'chokin b'tevin or b'kash, the same way percentage-wise or whatever it is, they divide also the straw and the stubble. Tosus explains the difference between the two is you have, when you have a stalk of grain, when you harvest it in the normal way by cutting it, you have the part of the stalk that comes off with the grain, with the sheaf of grain at the top. That part is called tevin, and then you have the part that stays attached to the ground and to the roots, which is called kash. So for example, Tosus brings for example parshas Shmos. That the Jewish people are going around kosher kash la tevin. Up until that point, they were being given tevin. They were being given the straw that had been harvested with the grain to use to make bricks. Now they're having to wander all around there in the giant to find cash, to find the part, the stubble that's still in there, that's still attached to the ground, and pick that to be able to use for tevin for their bricks.
But that's not why you can't use the bricks on
the. You could, no, you could, but that's the point. Up until then, Paroi and his officials were giving them tevin from the harvest as the matrim harvest their grain. They have the part of the stalk that was cut with the grain, which they don't need anymore. So some of it they use for animal food and whatever, and some of it they provided for making bricks. Now Paro is announcing that we're not doing that anymore. You guys are lazy, et cetera, et cetera. So now they have to wander all around there. It's just trying. The tevin is already gone. The tevin was already taken into the houses and it's stored in the barns over there. They now have to go in the field and look around for cash, for the stubble that's still attached to the ground, to pick that to be able to use as instead of straw for their bricks. And that's what made it so much harder. Not just the fact they're having to collect it on their own, but the fact they're having to collect it from what's still attached, from the little bit that's still attached to the ground, which is much harder, yeah.
Much harder.
Yeah. Okay. Kishem shechokin continues the mission in the same way as you divide the wine, let's say if it was a vineyard. Kachokin is murdered the same way they divide proportionately as far as the branches of the grapevines. You have branches that are cut off the grapevines throughout the year because they dry up or whatever. They divide those by the same percentages. And also the sticks. What sticks, we'll learn in the Gemara, these are sticks that you put. We know that grapevines by themselves won't grow high. They'll drag all over the ground. They're not strong. The grapevine branch is not strong enough to stand up on its own. So usually, sometimes they put them on a trellis. They make them go up a fence or whatever. Sometimes you put sticks underneath them to hold them up. That's the sticks we're talking about. Ushneim, Asaphimus, Akanim, and both of them are responsible for supplying the sticks.
What do you mean, both of them?
Both of them, both the owner and the artist. Which Rashi says, by the way, this last part, they provide them to begin with. They split the cost to begin with, providing the sticks. Therefore, at the end, they split them evenly. Rashi points out that part wouldn't apply to a choicher. A choicher, there's no splitting. He gives his rent, and that's it. Everything else, yeah. Okay.
So in other words, the forefather of the karka is providing with the sticks.
Yeah, according then Balabas, yeah.
The,
right. Okay, so Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Makam Shenagru Lichter Einu Nashoi Lacher. So in a place where the minig is to harvest by cutting, you're not allowed, the tenant, whether he's an artist or a choicher, is not allowed to unilaterally go and pull it out of the ground instead. Lacher Einu Nashoi Lichter, and conversely, if it's a place where they usually pull it out of the ground, he can't harvest it. Or Shnei Ma'akman Zelzen, either one can prevent the other one from changing from the common minig. Why is that? Lichter Einu Nashoi Lacher, because Hai Amabreinu Titzban Li Aroi. Why is it in a place where the minig is to harvest with sickles or whatever, the tenant can't decide on his own to pull it out of the ground? Because The Balabas can argue, it's better for me if you harvest, because then the stubble is left in the ground, and eventually it decomposes and it becomes fertilizer. Mm. So I'd rather have that. B'hai amaloy matzina lacher, whereas the other way around, b'hai amaloy matzina. Whereas if the minig is, the, if it's a place where usually you harvest, and instead the balabas says to the artist, you know what, this year I want you to instead pull it out of the ground, he can be ma'akiv, he can say, it's too hard. I don't want to have to do that. The minig I'm welcome over here is that we harvest. That's what I'm going to do. So that explains that direction. And lacher einu ashoy lit. So if it's a place where they usually pull it out of the ground, then you can't go unilaterally and decide to harvest. Why? Hi, I'm a b'inatinaker aroi. Because on the contrary, the balabas can argue it's better if you pull it out of the ground like it's supposed to be. This is a patch of ground, Rashi says, that doesn't need fertilizer. I'd rather have the field be completely clean. Therefore, you can't go and unilaterally decide that you want to, that you're gonna leave the stubble there for it to eventually be fertilized. And conversely, the other guy, the artist, can argue if it's a place where usually they pull it out of the ground, he can't say, well, let's harvest it, because the artist can say, I want more of that straw for my animals. If it stays in the ground, it goes to waste. So that's why we're saying that either one can be more active on the other. Which Mephoshim asked the question, if I call it Minigam Adina, what's the point of mentioning this anyway? And the point is, we can't say, fine, Minigam Adina. Maybe one or the other of them has a logical reason to override Minigam Adina.
Right.
Not good enough. Not good enough unless they both agree.
Agree.
They both have to agree, right, because there's a logical reason behind these two Minigam Adina. Yeah.
One thing is obviously better for the landlord.
One is better for the landlord. One might be better.
They have to agree.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. If they both agree, sure, they can change the minig as they want.
If they both agree.
But if they don't, then that's what we're saying. Either one can prevent the other one from changing it. Okay. Then we said, Shnei Ma'akvin Zel Zel Lovely. So then why does the Mishnah have to continue that both, one, the Braisa rather, why does it have to continue that both of them can be Ma'akvin on the other? The answer is Matam, Kalmar. What the Braisa is telling us is giving us a reason. Matam lichter in rashi lacher in rashi lichter mishum d'shnei ma'akvin zel zel, because both of them have a logical reason to say that I prefer one as opposed to the other. Therefore, neither one can do it unilaterally without the other one's permission.
And that's what we want.
That's what we want to prove. Okay. Then the Mishnah said lacher shachar of yachrish. If it's a place where the minig is to plow again after the harvest to kill the weeds, like Rashi said, then you have to do that. That's a pshita. Isn't that obvious? The answer is loy tzricha ba'asra deloy menakshi. Fine, we can be talking about a place where it's not normal to go and pick the weeds out of the ground. But also iuvenakish. In this case, this artist or this choicher voluntarily went and weeded the ground and pulled out the weeds on his own. So you would think, maybe you can say, well, the reason why I went to that trouble of doing that weeding is I figured that'll save me the effort of having to do an extra plowing afterwards. It accomplishes the same thing. Karivna is plowing. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush, that if he wanted that, D'iboy Leila Furushile, if he wanted to do that, he would have had to say so explicitly. The fact that he didn't say explicitly, fine, very nice, you got rid of all the weeds by pulling them out. Nevertheless, there might have been something you missed, whatever, go do that plowing. You know, that's your responsibility as a tenant. We say, Akol Kaminig Amadina, Akol Lasuyamai, what does that Akol come to include? What are the cases? Lasuyah Hadatan and Abban comes to include a case that's described in a Braisa like this. Malkum Shinagu Lahaskyu Ilonis Al-Gabekarka, a place where the minig is that they rent out the trees together with the ground, meaning Rashi says, so let's say for example, a person has the balabas, the landlord, has a grain field, and near it, or maybe even in it, he has trees. Now the grain field needs a lot of work. The artist has to do a lot of work with it. The trees need much less work. But nevertheless, there are some places where the minig is that the artist gets whatever percentage he's going to get out of the grain field, let's say 25% or whatever it is, he gets that same percentage from the trees, from the fruit of the trees, even though he hasn't done as much work with them. So in a place where they do that, maskirin, then you do that, then we assume that the trees are rented out as well, and the artist is entitled to his 25% or whatever
it
is.
He didn't do any work on the trees.
They did some work, but not as much as it. In a place where it's not the minute to do that, then you can't assume that they're the artist, even if he voluntarily goes and works on the trees, and that doesn't.
Okay.
Question is again, Pshita, isn't that obvious? The answer is, suppose that it's a place where normally the deal is you give an artist with the condition that the artist will get 2/3 of the crops, because he does a lot of work on there. and the balabas will get one-third. Now, let's say this particular balabas goes and instead makes a deal that he'll get one-fourth. He'll get 25% instead of 33%,
right,
which is different than the usual minigam and dinner. Maudetema de amalei. So you would think maybe in that case the balabas should say, hi de basrilah, the fact that I am willing to take less than my usual amount, I'm willing to take 8% less, that was having in mind that you're not going to take anything of the trees, and then I'll get that instead. Again, the chiddush is, if he wanted to do that, he would have had to specify. Not specifying, that's his problem. Tosis, by the way, asks the question. Usually we find that the artist gets much less than the balabas. What are we talking about over here? That he's getting 66 or 75 or whatever percent. So Tosis discusses the difference, for example, that there's a difference. We looked at the end of Ezo Neshech, different places, what the minhag, does the oris provide the seeds for planting, or does the balabas provide them? That makes a difference. That makes a difference as far as what they're going to do. If the oris provides the seed,
more.
Then he gets more, yeah.
So here he's
providing the seed. That's why we expect that he'd get a much larger percentage.
Right. We had that whole thing where the for ribbons.
Yeah, yeah.
Less than the seed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
In which case, then he would probably get less.
Right. And we said, and the other way around, if it's a place where it's not, where the trees are not usually rented out along with the field, then they're not considered rented. And again, the question is pshita. And the answer is exactly the other way around. If you're talking about a case where most balabatim will accept only a quarter of the produce from the artist, but also you're the kibla b'tlasa, and in this, or no, let's say the artist, you accept on himself that he's going to take it in a way where he's going to get 75%, and the balabas is going to get 25%. In this case, the artist himself said, when he first made the deal with the balabas, said, I'm going to take only two-thirds.
66.
So Maudetema Omalade hide its toilah, so that you'd think the artist can say the fact that I agreed extra to you, I died to the Havasli Bailonis. I had in mind that you'll also give me some of the produce of the trees. Again, Tamash Malandi Baila Purushala, he should have said so. The Mishnah said, Kashem Shachokan Batvua Kachokan Batevan Rakash, just as you divide the Tvua, so also you divide the straw and the stubble. So Amr of Yosef, it depends where we are. But Bavel, Nehigu, Delo Yehiv, Netivna, La'arisa. In Bavel, the minhag is that you don't give the straw to the aris. The balabas gets all of it. L'may nafkamina, so what's the point of mentioning that? The point is, the Ika Inish, the Yehiv, that you should know, if you do find somebody in Bavel who gives that, Ayin Yafahu, fine, he's being a nice guy. We can't learn from him that a new minhag amokam is developing. The minhag amokam in Bavel is you don't. You have exceptions, fine.
They're not trusted in.
Omer Rabbi Yosef. So now Rabbi Yosef says, in this connection, we talked about in the Mishnah, for example, that when it comes to the grapevines, that both of them are responsible for supplying the sticks. So now we're going to talk about some other things that are the responsibility of one versus the other. Just like we talked about in the previous paragraph about when you're renting a house, which things are the responsibility of the landlord to provide and which things are the responsibility of the tenant to provide. So also over here. Buchra v'tafta v'akavda. Now, like this, a field in those days. Usually, you would have around the field there would be a ditch. Around the field there would be a ditch to mark it off from the next field. You'd take that dirt that was dug out of the ditch and pile it along the edge of the field as a border between it and the next field. Then, eventually, time passes, and then it slumps down. People walk on it or whatever, just, you know, rain, whatever. So eventually you take more dirt, you redig the ditch deeper, and you pile more dirt on top of the barrier over there, and then eventually you do that a third time as well. So Rashi says then, Bukhra, Batafta, Va'akavta are the three stages of that. Bukhra is the first one, like the Bukhar. Tafta means more, and Akavta means like the one that rides on top of them. So the first, second, and third layers of dirt, the koni d'chizra, and the sticks that are stuck into the ground, which you put on top of that pile of dirt, you put sticks as a barrier, as a marker, as a fence around the field to prevent people from getting in. All those the balabayis, the chizra gufe darisa. But now the chizra. Now sometimes what they do is in those sticks they weave in and out through those sticks. They weave out thorns to prevent animals or people from getting, sort of like barbed wire now. So it's like the difference between the basic fence and the barbed wire on top of it. So the fence itself is the responsibility of the balabas. The chizra, the thorns, which are like the barbed wire, is the responsibility of the artist. So the general rule is called ikar balma de balabais, the ikar thing that is meant to keep intruders out, that you can't, you must have, they're absolutely necessary for a field, the pile of dirt and the pile of dirt and the sticks. Those are the balabais. The tirusi yisera, anything which is extra guarding, which is, in other words, Rashi says like this. If you have the pile of dirt and the stick and the fence of sticks around it, that's enough basically to prevent intruders from coming in. You're still going to need to guard the field yourself or hire workers or whatever. You put in the thorns, that makes it pretty much
between the sticks or on the.
You weave the thorns in and out through the sticks. Again, kind of like barbed wire. But that completely will keep out any intruders. Then that makes it you don't have to do any tircha of watching the field anymore. If the artist wants that kind of thing, he wants to save himself the tircha of watching the field by putting up those thorns, that's his responsibility. So that's the general rule. But Amar Rabbi Yosef says another din, as far as the tools that are used in the field, Mara Uzvila V'davla V'zanuka, the Balabayis, these four tools are the responsibility of the Balabas. Mara and Zvila are two different kind of digging tools. A hoe and a spade, or whatever you want to call them exactly. Davla is a bucket, to draw water to fill up the fields. And zarnuka is instead, sometimes in some places, instead of using buckets, they use bags made out of skin. Noid, it's called in Hebrew. Mara and zvila are two kinds of digging tools, a shovel and a spade, or a rake, whatever it is. Rashi gives French translations for it. If you know what poiser and pala and then fala are, then share it with us.
Oui.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Hagoyes HaGro brings over here that the Rambam understands them, that a mara is a shovel that you use to dig in the dirt, and zvila is what you use to carry the dirt away, like a wheelbarrow, whatever. Anyway, those things are responsibility of the balabas. Arisa Ovid Be'yori, but the oris is responsible for digging the ditches for the canals. Namely, like you have like a river or a large canal or whatever that comes near the field, but you dig smaller ditches from that into the field so that when the water level rises, when the tides come in or whatever, that the water will come into those ditches and then irrigate into those grooves, whatever, and irrigate the field. That is the responsibility of the artist to do. Because if he doesn't do that, he's gonna have to go and draw water and water the field manually. Again, if he wants his job to be easier, he has to do that. We said Kashem Shachokim Bayayan Kachokim is modus of a kanim. So the question is, kanim maya viditayu, what are sticks doing over there? We didn't understand what the point of the sticks in the Mishnah is. We mean smooth sticks that they use to hold up the peeled sticks, where they peel the bark off them and they use them to hold up the grapevine branches, like we were saying. Okay. We said Ushneim Sapim Sakanim, Lomali. Why does the Mishnah need to tell us that both of them supply the sticks? Lachura, if we say that they divide them automatically, then that means that they both supply them. The answer is Matam, comma. The Mishnah is giving us a reason. Matam, Shneim, Chokim, Akanim. Why indeed is it that they both divide them at the end of the season? Mishum, the Shneim, Asapkan, Asakanim. Because at the beginning of the season, they both supplied them. In other words, if it wasn't like that, if one of them supplied them all on his own, then he'll be entitled to all of them. Yeah.
What did you say? You said